All right, good Tuesday afternoon here on WGR Sports Radio 550. Brayton Wilson here, back with you once again on this fine afternoon as the Olympics continue to progress in Milan, Italy. We've got Olympic hockey on right now. Men's action between Czechia and Denmark. The winner of that game will go on to face Canada in the quarterfinal round. The loser will go home. Right now in the second period is Czechia leading 3-1 over the Danes. And then we just await the last game between Sweden and Latvia. The winner of that game will face the United States in the quarterfinal round. But just enjoying ourselves here in this fine Tuesday with the Olympics going on. Other sports, of course, going on. Spent a lot of time this Olympics watching biathlon. If you don't know what biathlon is, it's the cross-country skiing, and then the cross-country skiers shoot as well. That is some fun action. If you haven't ever gotten the chance to watch a biathlon event, maybe make some time in the rest of the Olympics here to do so. Find a time in the schedule to check it out. It's a lot of fun. 803-0551, 888-550-2550 are the numbers here. If you want to get in on the action this afternoon, Paul Hamilton will be checking in here momentarily. I'll be on with Paul up until 1 o'clock, and then it'll be Brad Ryder and Tim Graham once again from 1 to 3 o'clock right here on WGR. By the way, in case you don't know this now, not only are we on WGR Sports Radio 550 AM, but we are also now on 107.7 and 104.7 FM on the radio dial. So if you want to check us out on the FM side of things, 107.7 and 104.7 are the avenues that you could check out there. All right, Paul Hamilton joining us here on WGR now. Paul, it is certainly another fine Tuesday afternoon. Have you gotten the chance to check out any of the biathlon action at the Olympics?
The biathlon.
Yes. Do you know what the biathlon is?
I'm sure I've seen it before, but it's not coming to me right
now. It's cross country involving shooting as well. So
they
cross country.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
I have not seen any of it this year, but I have seen it in the past.
Man, that action has been phenomenal this year, and that is a very underrated sport in the Olympics, in the Winter Olympics. Frankly, any Olympics sport. Biathlon is a treasure that needs to be protected at all costs and just needs more attention because it definitely does not get the attention it deserves.
We had a shooting team in high school. I gave it a try once, and I go, nah, this isn't for me.
What? Just not a good shooter?
Yeah, well, it was the first time I had ever done that. And you know, when you're at the range, you're actually laying on your stomach. It's not a place where you can stand up or anything.
Right.
So you kind of crawl in. It was just like, nah.
Yeah, well, I mean, they start off by laying prone to shoot for the first round of shots. And then the second round of shots, the shooters will be standing and they'll try to shoot. And it's incredible, Paul, because there's two different ways that they have to aim when they're prone. They're having to aim at a target the size of a golf ball. And then when they're standing, they have to aim at a little something bigger, but about the size of a softball. And they're about half a football field away trying to make those shots. And they're also doing that after sprinting cross-country skiing. So that's part of the reason why it is such a fun sport to watch. Because it's like,
I know, who came up with it? You know, let's
some crazy man from Norway would be my guess. But what a gem that person would be. Let's see if I can find that. Who created the sport of biathlon? Let's see. Upon quick review and me very quickly reading, it looks like it was rooted in Scandinavia in Norway. Ha-ha! There we go.
Yeah, see?
Just looking through here, it became an Olympic sport in 1960, the first Olympic sport in 1960. And then for military patrol, there was a thing called military patrol back then, 1924 Olympics. So, yeah. It is, oh man, it is just such a fun sport. It is such a fun sport to watch and see some of those guys. Like today was the men's 4x7.5 kilometer relay. So, you know, it's four shooters from the same nation. They obviously have to go through. They do two rounds of shooting. They go around the course three times, and then they pass over the torch, sort of like a relay in track and field. And then they just go about it. It's insane. It's so much fun to watch.
Well, start training. You've got 4 years.
I think that time is come and gone for me, Paul. I don't think I could ever catch up to any sort of Olympic athlete. Although the U.S. did finish fifth, which was their highest finish for men's biathlon in this particular event that happened today. So good for Team USA. All right, Paul, on to the discussion that we have for today. I've put out the topic on Twitter that you can chime in with us and join in on the conversation. What should the Sabres do upon their return from the Olympics? Break. Should they make a trade? Are you comfortable with them standing pat, especially with bodies like Josh Norris and Zach Benson hopeful to come back? You could chime in. 803-0550 is the number. 1-888-552-550 is the toll-free number if you would like to join us there as well. You can also interact with us on social media at WGR550, at Brayton J. Wilson, and at PHAM1717. But Paul, so the Sabres officially, I know teams can return to practice starting today at 2 p.m., but the Sabres aren't slated to return to practice until tomorrow. Is that correct?
I think they're around, but I don't think they're getting on the ice.
Okay.
But I think they might be kind of getting themselves back to the arena and that type of thing, possibly.
Okay.
Maybe meetings and that type of thing.
Right, right. But obviously, it won't feature Tage Thompson or Rasmus Dahlin, because Dahlin will play against Latvia later today. And then if Sweden wins, then Dahlin and Thompson will end up playing each other tomorrow in the quarterfinal round of the Olympics, with the winner of that going on to hopefully play for a medal on Friday. But
the loser will be back here joining practice probably by the weekend.
Yep, probably. And we talked a lot about the Olympics yesterday, Paul, and we'll keep you updated. As actually, here's an update for you right now. Denmark just scored to make it 3-2, so they're trailing Czechia 3-2 with 2:48 left to go in the second period. And as I told you yesterday, I was picking Denmark to potentially be an upset favorite over Czechia. But Paul, with the Sabres, looking ahead to their return, when the players come back, what should be the focus of the Sabres in your eyes with the way that, they went into the Olympic break, losers of 3 of 4 games, but, you know, other than that, they've played a really, really great stretch of hockey that put themselves back in the playoff contention. They're still in a playoff spot with a .614 points percentage with 25 games left. What do you feel like should be the focus here with 25 games left and these guys coming back from a break and, you know, trying to get the gears going again to get themselves sticking around in playoff contention?
Well, 96, 97, let's say approximately 96 points get you in the playoffs, which is about right. Honestly, they need to basically go .500 the rest of the year.
Yeah.
They have 70 points. 13-12 gets you to 96. You know,
yep.
If you want to be safe, go 14-11, and that gets you to 98. So they're in good shape, but they can't afford the long losing streak, you know, that type of thing that goes on 6-7 games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have to avoid that. But, I think they're in pretty good shape coming out. I just think they were overplaying some people, especially their top four defensemen, which I think was starting to catch up with them when they got into the break. Now, one of them is still playing a lot of minutes over at the Olympics. The other three are not. So, but that's where I think I would like to see. I would like to see some, you know, a trade for a defenseman that can take some of those minutes off. Because even if Timmins went, or if he gets back, he was playing 19 minutes. That's too many,
mm-hmm.
I think, for him. And they really do miss him on the penalty kill. I got to figure out what the penalty kill was when he went out and compared to what it is now.
Right. They were in the top three at least, yeah. I think, when he was in there. And
yeah,
they've dropped to seventh
exactly.
Now.
And it hasn't gone as well at all. Now, 5-on-5, I didn't love his play. I thought he – too many turnovers.
Right.
But that didn't happen when he was killing penalties. He was a shot blocking machine.
Yeah.
He really did a great job in killing penalties, and I do think they miss him there. But I still want him on a third pair, maybe even the number six guy. I think that's what they traded for. I mean, they wanted to upgrade from Clifton, but I don't think you can be playing him 19 minutes. So I don't think he's the guy I'm thinking of right now. I'm thinking of a guy that maybe can play 19 minutes. It can take some of the minutes off that top four. And maybe it's just a rental.
Yeah.
You know, they're at a point now where I think you know, a rental is you know, something they should be looking at. And it's been a long, long time since we've been talking about rentals. 14 years since they've been in the playoffs. So, you know, that would be my main concern. I would like to maybe see a top nine guy just for depth,
mm-hmm.
because when they get guys hurt, they don't necessarily have the depth that they need. As you mentioned, Benson and Norris, unless something really went wrong during the break, will likely be back a week from tomorrow when the season starts up again. You may have Luukkonen back by then, and then we'll find out. You know, a guy we don't ask about, and I'm kind of mad we don't because I'm kicking myself, because when he's healthy, I think he needs to be in the lineup because I think they've missed him, is Josh Dunn. I mean, that line, energy line, they spend basically the whole game in the offensive zone forechecking. They don't necessarily produce goals, but they soften up the D for the other lines, and they just are so tenacious on the forecheck. They get the defensemen to start looking over their shoulders. Where's Malenstein? Where's Dunn? Where are they coming from? When Greenway's healthy, where's he? You know, and I really don't think – I like Kozak, I really do, but he's a little bit different type of a player, and I don't think that line has performed as well since Dunn has been out. And as strange as this might sound, I think Dunn has to be in the lineup on a nightly basis. I think he brings an ingredient to this team, which I really think helps this team win. And that's softening up D. That's getting a forecheck, which is contagious. When you see that line working as hard as it does, and they're all around the net, and they're all banging around the net, and they're all in on the forecheck, the other line's like, oh, cool, let's go,
mm-hmm.
you know, type of thing. It's almost like contagious. So he's a guy we don't talk about much, and you know, when we ask about injuries, we don't necessarily ask about him, and I kind of kick myself that we don't, because I think he's an important part of their team.
Yeah. You going back to your point, Paul, about making a trade to acquire a defenseman as a rental, the defensemen that are out there for the purposes of rental aspect there's not a lot out there. I mean, I'm just looking at the defenseman available based off points right now at puckpedia.com. Darren Radish is the top defenseman available, who will be an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year, but Tampa Bay is not trading him. John Carlson's an interesting name, because if Washington figures that they're too far out of it and maybe they can't find a way back, I mean, does he become available? I personally don't see them trading a key piece of their defense going forward. And then other than that, I mean, you're looking at guys like a Logan Stanley, who's an interesting name. Maybe an Ian Cole, who's a very solid defensive defenseman, who's with the Utah Mammoth. He's 36, but can certainly be a stalwart in the back there. Maybe a guy like Connor Murphy is interesting from the Chicago Blackhawks. He's on the last year of his deal.
Aren't guys that are going to take minutes off the top guys.
Right.
They're the number six guy.
Yeah.
Murphy might be a little different story.
Maybe. Yeah.
Maybe. You know, although he doesn't – I don't know. He's never really excited me, to be quite honest with you.
No.
But, you know, you never know who you can get loose from a team.
Yeah.
You know, what teams might be thinking and that type of thing. So, if it's not there, it's not there.
Yeah.
You know, but it'd be something I definitely would be looking to add if I could. But I wouldn't force anything either if I were Jarmo Kekalainen.
Let's just put it this way, Paul. It's not a sexy list of defensive options if you're trying to buy a guy as a rental for the deadline on the back end. And I'm factoring in left shot and right shot defensemen. Like, it is just a list of guys that are just guys. As you mentioned, they're not minute eaters. I mean, one of them is Zach Bogosian. You really want to try to add Zach Bogosian again to the lineup? No. I would say no. You know, here's a name, Paul, and a very familiar name, because he's got local ties, and he's actually played really well with the Utah Mammoth this year. Nick DeSimone is a guy who I think has gotten an expanded role in Utah, a guy that really just battled through the AHL for years to try to get his moment in the NHL. And this year in Utah, he's been fairly decent. Mind you, he's not a points producer at all, but he's a guy that, you know, is a defensive-minded sort of player. He can join the rush if absolutely needed. But to your point, though, is he a minute muncher? Not really.
Yeah, I'm not looking for just a guy.
Yeah.
They have guys. I've liked Metsa. I've liked Bryson for the roles that they've had. They've got those guys. You know, Timmons, whenever he gets back, they've got those guys. So they've got a guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're eight deep or more. I think Bryson's probably at his best season that I've seen him have. Metsa has been a very pleasant surprise.
Yes, very.
But again, they're not what we're talking about here. I mean, you got to keep those guys around 12, 15 minutes. You can't be running them up on minutes. Otherwise, you wind up in a jackpot.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, if that guy's not there, I definitely would not force it.
One thing I'm looking at, Paul, and you kind of, I mean, you talked about the penalty kill, especially with like a Connor Timmons. One sort of area that I think needs improvement going forward, and maybe it's solely just a matter of getting healthy bodies back, is the power play. Right now, they're sitting right in the middle of the pack at 16th, 21.1% on the power play overall this year. They've been good. They started out really good, then they struggled, and then as I think you made mention yesterday, they put up stretches of, you know, goals in the power play in six straight games, but other than just those goals, they've looked very pedestrian. You know, they can't get entry into the zone. They can't make passes. They're overpassing sometimes. They're overcomplicating things. And to me, it feels like there could be some wiggle room to make an improvement. Maybe find somebody on the trade market or whatnot that could improve the power play. Whether it's improving puck movement or just being a body in front of the net that could create havoc. It just feels like to me there's something with the power play that when the Sabres come back from the Olympic break, if they can find an extra piece to make that unit more dangerous, I think that could help them going forward.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, if you can find some depth to your top nine, you might be able to find something there. You know, that would be maybe an option, depending, again, what's there. Again, I'm not going to force it. The power play has scored in its last six games. They've also, in other power plays within those games, can't even get the puck in. It's interesting how Dahlin has really, I think has done a really nice job with Team Sweden on the power play.
Yeah, I agree.
Where he's taken over for Carlson,
mm-hmm,
and Hedman, you know, is on their number one unit, where in the Four Nations he couldn't even get on the power play. And really, I think, has done a nice job. Then I watch him sometimes on the Sabres power play, and I think it's still a little bit of a fault. They just try to keep forcing Thompson. Well, the NHL watched Thompson actually blow them up for a season and said, that ain't happening again. He is not going to be the one to beat us. Everybody else on this ice can try beating us.
Mm-hmm.
You got four others. If they can beat us, fine. That guy isn't going to beat us. So they're taking him away. I thought it would help more than it has so far, but again, Norris hasn't been able to get a consistency together. You know, because, you know, he plays some games and then he's out. I thought putting him in the other circle might help.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's helped as much as I thought it might. Really, their best power play guy is Zucker,
mm-hmm,
the guy in front of the net,
yeah,
who is able to tip pucks and do things. If I'm not mistaken, I believe half his goals are power play goals. Or close to it.
Close to it, yeah. I think you're on the right track there.
Yeah, and so... You know, so if they could find somebody, again, that would help give them some depth on their top, mm-hmm, nine and help them on the power play, I think, you know, that would be a plus for them too. Oslin, I think, eventually could be a very good power play person.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, you know, and they've taken him off it. It didn't go as well, you know, but again, he's a kid. He's 21 years old. He's a smart player. He's,
yes,
done very well.
Yeah.
But maybe it wasn't the thing to do you know, to on the power play. It just didn't work. I would have thought Jack Quinn would be better on the power play than he has been, you know, whether it's been on the top unit or on a second unit. So, you know, you would have thought maybe that would have gone better, but it hasn't.
Yeah.
So
Jack Quinn's been an interesting piece to the puzzle here this year, because there,
sure,
are some games where he looks like he did earlier this year where, you know, his skating has improved significantly and he looks like the version of Jack Quinn that we all expected him to be. And then there are other games where he just looks lost out there. I mean, there was a game, I think it was the Tampa game just before the break, where I think I audibly yelled at my TV twice because Jack Quinn on the power play just looked like he was just a top, just spinning around, not knowing where he's supposed to be. And I think he got in the way of two shots on goal on a particular series of events that happened. And I think both of those times, in both those instances, I audibly screamed at my TV. I'm just like, dude, if you don't know where you are and you're supposed to be, get off the ice.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's there are a couple times he's passed up shots.
Yeah.
Why is he passing up shots?
Yeah, why?
I mean, with the shot he has, and, you know, after his, you know, great AHL season, you know, I thought this is a guy that could consistently be a 30-goal scorer in the NHL, but it hasn't worked out that way. And, you know, so it's – I don't know if injuries have derailed his career to a point where that's never going to work out, but it just hasn't. And we should have gotten maybe a taste of it during the AHL playoffs, back when he and Peterka and Krebs and those guys were down there. They all were excelling, except – and that was the year Quinn had a great season. I think he only played 48 games, but was well over 20 goals,
right,
if I recall.
And was very quiet in the playoffs.
Yeah, he didn't have a goal in the playoffs because, you know, they the team they were playing decided they were just going to beat on him.
Yeah.
And I don't remember if it was Laval or
I think it was
Belleville.
Syracuse.
Whoever it was.
Yeah.
They decided that they were just going to bully him to a point of oblivion.
Yeah.
And he did not handle it well at all. Peterka and Krebs were like, you want to hit us? Go ahead. We'll be fine. We'll just go score. And you guys can all be happy that you hit us, but we'll go down and score. How's that for you?
Right.
And that's the way those two handled it. Quinn didn't handle it that way, and he disappeared. So, and I thought, it's just a young player trying to find his way. Yeah, he maybe disappeared, but I thought he'd be fine. But for whatever reason, he hasn't.
Yeah. Paul, I want to throw two names at you, back to the power play discussion. I've worked the little filters system here on puckpedia.com for players that are on expiring contracts, potential rental players that the Sabres could try to bring in that would be maybe options for the Sabres power play to help them improve. And there's two names that really stick out to me. One name is a veteran, a very much a power play guy. And the other guy, he's only played 5 games this year, and he's got ties to Jarmo Kekalainen. And I feel like that maybe if there is an opening for him to make an impact in the Sabres roster, it could work out. The veteran guy that is maybe a given in this conversation is Tanner Pearson, currently with Winnipeg. And the other one is Patrick Laine. Like Patrick Laine,
no,
was part of
you.
You want no, part of Patrick Laine.
None. I've watched enough people give a half an effort and don't care. And over 14 years, I don't need to see another one.
Okay. All right. What about Tanner Pearson?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, what is your vision for what he would bring?
I mean, a top nine forward can be a decent person on the second power play unit. You know, he's a guy that has a decent shot to him. He can go to the net. You know, I mean, his production over the last few years has dropped off. But again, he's 33 years old, and he's just a guy that over the years has been dropping down the lineup just a bit. But, you know, as a depth piece to a team that needs some offensive juice to them and maybe getting a little more extra goal production, it might be productive to get a guy like a Tanner Pearson in there. And just for the matter of if you can get something out of Patrick Laine, that's the only reason I bring him up, is that if he's healthy, if he's good to go, and that if there's some way that anybody could get Patrick Laine's gears going, especially after his injury battles that he's had, that maybe that could reap some benefits for the Sabres in this run towards the end of the year.
Well, nobody's ever been able to get Patrick Laine's competitive juices going. So, and, you know, Pearson.
I just figured I'd bring him up, Paul.
Pearson is a guy has 7 goals and 3 assists for 10 points. He's really not. That's kind of why I asked what you were thinking here, because he's just not somebody I'm thinking of that.
Sure.
Really. I mean, he maybe is a guy that can back up Malenstein.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, and you give up a fourth-round pick for him or something.
They have enough
like that.
Of those guys that can back up Malenstein.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, he scored 24 goals. I'm looking back, but that was back in 2016-17 with the Kings.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at his seasons last year with Vegas, 12 goals. The year before, 5 goals with Montreal. He was injured with the Canucks the year before. So, yeah, that wouldn't be anything I'd be looking for.
Fair enough. 803-0551, 888-552-550 to join us if you want to get in on this conversation. The question is, what should the Sabres do upon their return from the Olympic break? Is it make a trade? Are you comfortable standing pat with some of the bodies that could be coming back? You're more than welcome to join us in this conversation. When we come back, Paul, we'll get some reaction on social media to this question. And also, one other player in particular that I did want to bring up, because his future in Buffalo is very much, I think, at this point in question more than ever. We'll get to him in just a matter of moments. Brayton Wilson, Paul Hamilton filling in for Sabres Live today on WGR Sports Radio 550 and also now on 107.7 and 104.7 FM.
Good movement here. Tuck is in the bumper spot, wants a deflection, but that shot will come off the corner. Back to Tuck, and that one deflects it again! The deflection barrage of goals for the Sabres continues. Alex Tuck this time. It's 1-0.
That was a recent goal from Alex Tuck. I believe it was the game against the Kings where he scored a hat trick. Alex Tuck is a very interesting talking point, Paul. We'll get a little bit more to him real quick in just a second. But real quick, an update. Czechia and Denmark back underway in the third period. Czechia leading Denmark still 3-2 with less than 18 minutes left to play in regulation. All right, Paul. So with Tuck, interesting with him because obviously we all know he's in the last year of his contract. Negotiations between his agents and general manager Jarmo Kekäläinen appear to be ongoing and continuing, but we're approaching the trade deadline. We're approaching that point where, you know, do the Sabres risk trading him and then trying to get him re-signed in the offseason? Do they get a contract extension done now, or is it a matter of, hey, we just wait and see what happens and go from there?
No, I would say it's wait and see what happens, to be quite honest. I would not be trading Alex Tuck. If he becomes one of your own rentals, then he becomes one of your own rentals.
Mm-hmm.
And just because you don't have a contract done by the time the trade deadline, that's not like a deadline as far as signing Alex Tuck. The negotiation can change at any time from wherever it is now to where both sides are satisfied. So I don't think in my mind, if I were the general manager of the Buffalo Sabres, I wouldn't even care about the, when we're talking about Alex Tuck, the trade deadline would be nothing to me. It would just be whatever.
Okay.
He's not going anywhere. I think it would gut this team if Alex Tuck got traded. It would send a message to this team that, well, I guess we're not going for it this year as mm-hmm. far as making the playoffs and seeing what we can do. Because he is a key part of this hockey team. And I know people disagree with me, and I respect their opinions on this, and they could be very well right. But in this specific case, I understand you're signing a 30-year-old maybe up to his 37th or 38th birthday.
Right.
That can turn into a contract disaster.
Right.
I understand that. The Florida Panthers have signed some contracts which maybe raise some eyebrows. They also have 2 Stanley Cups.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. They're not second-guessing themselves.
Right,
there.
They're not second-guessing those, even if those contracts turn bad. Still, you get a Stanley Cup out of it. So I personally feel it's very, very important to get him re-signed. Now, if he's asking for $15 million, no, and he's not. But I'm just saying, I'm trying to be way out there.
Right.
Yeah, okay. There's a point where you got to say no.
No, right. And
but But if he's asking for 10-7, which is what Kempe got,
yep.
or between 10-7 and 11, I don't think that's hugely unreasonable. You know,
right. But 11.5 is what one of the reports I saw. That, to me, seems a bit steep for a guy to lock him in for, you know, 7 more years to 37 years old.
Yeah, that just might be. Yeah, that might be where you say, well, I know you really need Alex Tuck, but, you know, maybe he's overvaluing himself if he were to be asking. And I don't necessarily believe a lot of that stuff that's out there because most of it's not true anyway.
Yeah, right. It's mostly all just speculation.
But if that were the case, yeah, that might be the point where you say, nah, no, you can't do that. You know, it's also been out there the Sabres want to offer him 8.5. Really? Really? That's where you think this is going to end, at 8.5? And I don't believe that either, if I'm being quite honest with you. You know, nobody, all these people who think they know, none of them know because they're not in the negotiation. The Buffalo Sabres know, and the Bartletts know, the agents. And they know what the offers are on both ends and where they are and if there's a place where they can get into the middle. You know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but yeah, if you were to say or that we found out for sure it's 11.5, I'd say, yeah, that is a little steep. I don't think he's that much better than Kempe. I think he's a little. I could live with 11.
10, sure.
7 to 11.
Sure.
Between the two players.
Yeah.
So
10.625 mil is Kempe's cap hit after he gets that new contract to kick in. I'm looking at just the regular stats, the underlying stats and everything. And given the fact that Alex Tuck is more so a two-way presence than Adrian Kempe, who's more so an offensive presence, I think when you kind of factor everything in, it sort of evens itself out at this point right now. And given this is just this year's production. So that could change after this year. Kempe could take off and Tuck could fall back. Or Tuck could take off and Kempe could fall back. It's always the risk of signing these big contracts. But when you look at the surface and then when you look a little deeper into everything, it seems fair at this point to look at everything and say, okay, Alex Tuck might, you know, still be worth just as much as Adrian Kempe, and if you want to maybe eclipse that a little bit more, then sure, give it a shot.
I think he's worth a little bit more because I think he's one of the best penalty killers in the National Hockey League, and he can add a little offense to your penalty kill, which he has done. I haven't seen anybody who swipes the puck like he does, that like comes up from behind or all of a sudden winds up with the puck and not only steals it,
right,
but turns it into offense. You know, the other way. He is so good at that. So those are the little things that I think maybe put Alex Tuck a little bit ahead of Kempe. But when I say a little bit, I always round Kempe off to 10-7, but 10-6-2, whatever. Between that and 11, you know, I'd go up to 11, I think, and that I don't know if I would go too much further than that.
Yeah.
But, you know, because I do think Tuck is the better player by a little.
Yeah, it's very minuscule. And again, they're two very much different players in terms of just Kempe is definitely more so the offensive threat and Alex Tuck is more so of just that solid two-way presence. And I agree with you, Paul, where his presence on the penalty kill is stellar. It's exceptional. And, you know, you cannot take away from what Alex Tuck is able to do at both ends of the ice. And Adrian Kempe, yes, he's a good offensive presence, 46 points, 56 games, but Alex Tuck is 48 points in 56 games. So the difference, again, as we mentioned, it's minuscule. So if at this point it comes down to can he get Kempe money, then okay, great, fine. Get there, get it done, and don't worry about it going forward. But yeah, I just don't know how much further I'd rather go over, I don't know, say $11.5 million. I mean, if it's 11.5, I'd be kind of second guessing it. But at this point, yeah, if he can land around Kempe or get maybe as much or just a touch north of where Kempe is, okay, get it done.
And Tuck has 2 36-goal seasons and right now on an 82-game pace of 32 goals.
Yeah.
for what he has, 22 goals in 56 games. That's a 32-goal pace.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you where it's too much of a risk to trade him at this point. Like, even if the negotiations are very far away from each other and, you know, there's a wide gap there, it's too risky to move on from him just because of what he means to the locker room, what he means to the community, and just the fact that, you know, he is an important piece to the Sabres organization right now. Wait and see is probably the best option at this point. It's a little unsettling though when you know that maybe one of your key cogs to the puzzle is his future is very much up in the air and you're kind of just sitting on your hands waiting and seeing what happens.
Yeah, and if a fan is saying, all right, well, what has Kempe done? He has one 41-goal season and two 35-goal seasons so far, and he's just a shade behind Tuck. He's got 20 goals in 56 games this year, so quickly that would come out to 29 goals over in 82 games. So Tuck's never scored 40. But he has two 36-goal years. Kempe, with his 41, has one year of 36 or more.
803-0551, 888-552-550, if you want to join us on the conversation. What should the Sabres do upon their return from the Olympic break? Should they make a trade? Should they stand pat, given the fact that they're going to get some hopeful bodies like Josh Norris and Zach Benson back? You're more than welcome to join us on the phones or on social media as well. Getting some interaction on social media, Paul. Jason tweets in. He wants to put out calls out to a few names. One of the names we mentioned was Logan Stanley on the back end, and as you made mention, the minutes aren't exactly there, but he'd be a solid presence on the bottom four. The other names that I think are at this point, in my eyes, I think they're pipe dreams, but they're not so far out of the question. The two names that he brings up are Jason Robertson and Nico Hischier.
Well, sure,
I would love to get either of those guys.
Yeah.
Sign me up for that.
The New Jersey Devils should be, cut out of the National Hockey League if they trade Hischier.
Yeah.
I mean, but he's absolutely right. I would love to have those two players. I don't, maybe Robertson might be somebody they have talked about being available.
Yeah.
So certainly if he becomes available, I'd want to be in on that. Would want to be on an either player.
Yeah.
If they were to become available. Stanley, that's Buffalo fan who wants all six of their defensemen to be 7'3", 340 pounds, and gets in six fights every game.
Yeah.
I mean, Stanley is – I don't need somebody that's going to put somebody through the back wall. I couldn't care less about that.
So,
and take bad penalties. And so I would pump the brakes on him. I just don't need the guy who's going to do that. That's not what this team – this team is fine – especially when Dunn's in the lineup, they're fine at defending each other. They, ever since the Thompson-Samuelson thing, they've been much better at that. They show up in a group of five. They're there for each other. Right now, that's not their problem.
Yeah, Nico Hischier, by the way, he's got one more year left on his contract at $7.25 million. He'll be 28 by the time he hits unrestricted free agency after next season. He's a guy that has actually been relatively healthy this year. He's actually played in every single game, Paul, this year, but he's had injury concerns in the past. I know Lindy Ruff knows him well because he coached him in New Jersey, so he's certainly an interesting name in that aspect, and maybe with the way the Devils have been, you don't have to maybe give up necessarily so much to acquire a guy like Nico Hischier, just because they also do have other pieces like Jack Hughes and some other the younger talent that's in there that are definitely no-goes. Nico Hischier might be an interesting name to try and pry off of the Devils. Jason Robertson, I think the price to go get him would be just astronomical. I think the Dallas Stars would ask for the moon for him, so that I don't even entertain that idea. I would love it, trust me, don't get me wrong, but I think the price to go get a guy like Jason Robertson would be insane. Let's hit to the phone lines here, and let's go to Joe in Buffalo. Joe, good afternoon. You're on WGR. Go right ahead.
Hey, how are you guys? Real quick, if I can make 2 points. What do you think Alex Tuck, another team, say he goes on a free agent market, is another team giving him 12-2, 12-5, 12-7 for 7 years? I'm just speculating now what your opinion is on that, if he does hit the market. And what's so wrong with, at this point, 13 years, whatever it's been, you know, what's so wrong with making a big splash saying, here, here's our first round pick next year. Here's Jack Quinn. What do you need? You need Tyler Kosek? I mean, what to get another quality player while Tage is still Tage? So, you talk about keeping talking Tage and stuff like that, but at the same time, you need another quality.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Joe.
Nothing is wrong with that at all. I'm all for it.
I agree.
It's the right player. You were talking about Hischier, and the first thought in my mind is, well, what if they ask for Osland? And I'm thinking, sure, if I'm going to get Hischier, even though he's, 27, won't be 28 till next January, and you talk about injuries, he's played 75, 71, 81, 70. He had the year of 21 and then 58 and 69 and 82. This year he's played 57. The 71 and 75 and 80 and, 4 years of over 70, I'm okay with that as far as you go with that. But just the type of player he is, a leader, that's the type of trade, that I think the caller was just talking about, and I'd be all for it. But I just don't see the Devils. I wouldn't understand the Devils wanting to do that. I don't think they're all that far away. Part of the reason the Devils are where they are is Jack Hughes has only played 36 games this year.
Mm-hmm.
I would be looking for that. And, Dougie Hamilton has had problems there. There you go. You want 32-year-old Dougie Hamilton?
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you?
Probably not. I mean, he's been injury riddled too. So I mean,
this year he's got 52 games in, 7 goals, 14 assists. So
sure.
The offense hasn't been there. So does he help your power play?
Maybe. Yeah, he might.
Maybe.
He might.
Can he take some minutes away? But he's not the best defensive defenseman in the world.
Right.
So you'd be trading for offense, and you'd be giving up some things. So with that in mind, can he take some of those minutes away from the top four? And I just bring him up because his name was out there earlier in the season. I think I'm probably with you. I think I'm in the probably not category because I just don't think you win in the playoffs when you got one-way defensemen and those types of things. So, yeah, it's Hischier, that one took me by surprise. I'm still thinking about that. But I just don't see why the Devils would want to, unless he is asked to be traded.
Right.
Behind closed doors and nobody knows. I mean, if he says, I want out, I don't want to be here anymore, okay, maybe that's a different story. Maybe there's something behind it that we don't know. But other than that, I just don't see why the Devils would want to part with him.
803-0551, 888-550-2550. We'll step aside, close out the final segment before we move on over for Brad Ryder and Tim Graham, but appreciate your interactions and your phone calls today. Kevin, if we do have some time, we will try to get your phone call when we come back here. Another interesting question to bring up here as we head into the final part of the season. Brayton Wilson, Paul Hamilton with you here on WGR Sports Radio 550, also on 107.7 and 104.7 FM. All right, one final segment here on WGR Sports Radio 550. Brayton Wilson, Paul Hamilton with you. Paul, I do want to get in Kevin's question here because I think it ties into a bigger discussion that maybe we can have some other day. But one of the things that I think is a focus here going into this final stretch is what the Sabres are going to do in goal, because Kevin was asking about Devin Levi's future, and I know that, he was very highly thought of by the organization for some time. I don't know where that kind of stands right now, but they've got Lukanen, they've got Lyon, and they've got Ellis up here. What do the Sabres do with the goaltending situation, if you could answer that in like 30 seconds?
Well, they're to a point now where you might as well stick with the three. I mean, because the rosters expand after the trade deadline, you just have to stay under the cap. Devin Levi's 24. Remember, Allmark was 26 before he became good. Lukanen was, 25? Ryan Miller, 24 or 5, I want to say 5, but just since we don't have time, I can't look it up. So I think Levi's right where he should be. I think he's on track. I don't think they've lost confidence in him, and I don't think they'll do anything with the three goalies right now because, quite honestly, they don't need to anymore.
Very good. Well, Paul, thanks for the last couple of days, and I'm sure we'll be talking very soon again on our airwaves about the future of the Sabres and everything else hockey.
I'll be back at practice tomorrow starting at 11.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you, Paul.
Yep.
All right. Paul Hamilton and myself, Brayton Wilson, thanks everybody for tuning in. Coming up next year on WGR, it is another two-hour special with Tim Graham and Brad Ryder coming up for you over the next couple of hours here on WGR. Thanks again, everybody, for listening in. Stay tuned here on WGR Sports Radio 550, and also keep listening to us at 107.7 and 104.7 FM.